First, for 150 years, Americans have observed Memorial Day. For some, it's a day off or time to spend with friends and family. For others, it's a day of remembrance for those lost in America's many wars and conflicts. The holiday as we know it today has its roots in the Civil War and has been observed in some way ever since. This year, it also falls on the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I. Our next guest is here to talk about the history of Memorial Day and about how we've observed it over the years. Kenneth C. Davis is an author and historian. He's the author of Don't Know Much About History and other books in the Don't Know Much About series. His latest book, which he spoke with us about recently, is More Deadly Than War, The Hidden History of the Spanish Flu and the First World War. Ken, welcome back to Central Time.
Good afternoon, and it's a great pleasure to be with you on this very special American holiday.
It really is, and as we said in the intro, it's extra special because of these large commemorations, 150 years of the holiday, 100 years since the end of World War I. What are some of the earliest examples of observing Memorial Day?
Well, because we can argue about everything in America, we even argue about when Memorial Day began. I call it the 150th anniversary because this is the date on which a man named General John Logan, a Civil War and Mexican War veteran and a politician from Chicago, announced to a fraternal organization that they would set aside May 30th as a day on which to go and lay fresh flowers on the graves of the fallen, those who had fallen in the late Civil War. And that's sort of officially marked as the beginning of Memorial Day, or as it was then known, Decoration Day, because people were going to decorate graves. There were several other earlier such ceremonies, including one in 1865 in Charleston, South Carolina. Petersburg, Virginia had one. So this is something that quite a few other cities and places have staked a claim to. But when we say this is the date, this is when we officially began marking May 30th, which used to be the day that most of the country marked Memorial Day or Decoration Day, except in the southern states. And that's another point we argue about, because they saw this as a Union holiday and they wanted to have their own Memorial Days for Confederate soldiers. So 150 years later, of course, we're still arguing about these memorials, monuments, and tributes to the men and women who were lost in the Civil War.
Well, it is very interesting, Ken, because as you said, this came out of the Civil War. Clearly, the North won, the South lost. And so it's understandable that the South would see this as almost, a gloating on the part of the North. So, but I'm sure that the South wanted to respect and honor their fallen soldiers as well. So did they have a parallel celebration, or did they try to distance themselves as much as possible?
No, there was actually it wasn't parallel. They set up separate days entirely, depending on which state. Some of them came on Robert E. Lee's birthday. Some were set on Jefferson Davis's birthday, Jefferson Davis being the president of the Confederacy. But it was very pointedly in opposition to this so-called Yankee or Union or Northern holiday. And when you go back and read what General John Logan wrote in May of 1868, 150 years ago, he said that this was to remember to gather around the sacred remains of those who had fallen to bring freedom to a race in chains. Forgive me, I'm stumbling a moment. Freedom to a race in chains, and because they had fought a rebellious tyranny in arms. Well, that kind of sentiment did not certainly sit well in the defeated Confederacy, and that's why this holiday sprang up in other ways in the former Confederacy. Now, of course, as time went by and the Civil War was more or less forgotten, certainly by 50 years later, Memorial Day or Decoration Day had already become sort of a picnic holiday. People, in fact, used to take their picnic baskets and go to the cemeteries to lay those fresh flowers on the grave. So by the turn of the 20th century, Memorial Day had become, or Decoration Day had become, a sort of summer kickoff holiday in its own way. Then comes 1918 and the horrific losses 100 years ago at this time, as about a million American servicemen land in Europe to begin fighting in the war that was known as the Great War then, because there was no World War One, because they didn't know there would be a World War Two.
I believe it was the war to end all wars, wasn't it?
That's what they called it afterwards, yeah. And that was certainly the optimistic hope when the guns fell silent and they negotiated the Versailles Peace Treaty in the spring of 1919. Of course, it resolved very little. There were predictions that another war would follow in 25 years. It only took 20 years from 1919, of course, to 1939 for Europe to go up in flames again. But it was the great losses by Americans, about 100,000 men lost in less than a year's time, that reawakened the much more unified desire to mark what Memorial Day should mean. And so it was expanded to become a holiday not to honor the Civil War dead, but all of those who gave their life in service to the country, what Abraham Lincoln had called in the Gettysburg Address, giving the last full measure of devotion. And that's what we mark today. I know people want to say Happy Memorial Day. I say it myself all the time. I stumble on it because it's not a happy day. It is a somber day of remembrance and celebration, I suppose, of this sacrifice. I suppose in one sense we could say we're happy that we have the freedoms that we have, but not acknowledge they came at enormous cost.
We're talking with Kenneth C. Davis. He's an author and historian, and he's sharing with us the history of Memorial Day and how it has changed over time. And Ken, so let's go back to that end of World War One, horrible, horrible conflict. Did the marking of Memorial Day or Decoration Day change after that tremendous loss that was so much more fresh and raw for people of the time than those losses of the Civil War?
It was clearly a bit of a turning point because the nation did come together and now acknowledge that we were a united nation that had lost and made tremendous sacrifices in Europe. And it was at that point that the decision was made in Congress to create a memorial in Arlington National Cemetery, of course, the tomb of the unknown soldier and the remains of a soldier who'd been killed in the trench war in Europe were returned to the United States. That tomb was prepared and ready to be opened in 1921 on the Memorial Day or Decoration Day in 1921. So powerful symbolism about Memorial Day coming from the Civil War. Arlington itself, of course, is a vestige of the Civil War. It is built on land that was confiscated from the family of Robert E. Lee, the Virginia general who commanded the Army of Northern Virginia. It was deemed appropriate that the land that was confiscated from him should be turned into a cemetery for soldiers lost in that great conflict. World War One comes along, and we have two other very powerful symbols. One I just mentioned, the Tomb of the Unknown, comes out of World War One, but perhaps even more familiar to many people is the poppy, the symbol of remembrance, not only in America, but around the world. And this comes out of an incident in World War One, in which a Canadian surgeon had gone to the terrible battlefield called Flanders. And he wrote a poem that begins very simply, "In Flanders fields the poppies blow between the crosses row by row." And that image of these blood-red poppies coming up in midst of this forest of crosses inspired a young American woman to start selling poppies, first silk poppies, later they became the paper poppies, as a way to raise funds for veterans of the war and their orphans and children. And that's how the poppy, a symbol of World War One, becomes associated with this holiday.
It's a very powerful symbol, and especially in Europe, when you're driving the roads in especially northern Europe, you see poppies. Poppies are the most common roadside flower, and I think it is still so so present for people in Europe, the meaning of that flower in the context of World War One.
Very much the flower of remembrance, and as we've gone through these few years leading up to the centennial of the end of World War One, there have been these extraordinary displays of poppies in and around London in particular. of course, for Americans, the war is a little bit remembered a little differently. August 1914 is the beginning of what became known as World War I. It was being fought for 3 years with such horrific losses of millions of men and women, civilians and soldiers, in the course of 3 years of fighting. The United States had remained neutral through all of that. Finally, in 1917, the United States decides to join the war in fighting Germany. And it then takes nearly a year, because we had no real standing army at the time. I think we had something like the 30th smallest army in the world at the time. President Wilson called for quickly ramping up the number of servicemen. And so these training camps sprang up across the country, and in the spring of 1918, we were ready to send 1 million men to France. And as we talked about the last time I was on the show, it was those 1 million men who are carrying the virus, the Spanish flu virus, as it was later called, and brought it to France, that spread this terrible disease around the world. So you can't talk about the losses of World War I, in a sense, without discussing the terrible losses from the Spanish flu.
And it's so interesting, because the quantity and just huge number of losses in World War I is often attributed to the fact that it was really the first mechanized war. But then something as elemental as a virus has that tremendous toll as well.
That's right. I mean, we talk about round numbers, about 100,000 American soldiers dying in World War I, but maybe as many as 40,000 of those soldiers, if not more, died from the flu. War is always more deadly in the sense that diseases, infections, battlefield difficulties, contagions are usually much worse on the battlefield than the war itself. That was certainly true in the American Civil War and has been throughout history, and it proved to be true again in World War I. But even as you said, it was the first industrial war, in a sense. The munitions that had come online, the tanks, the gas, the artillery that could throw shells 75 miles, this was all brand new to a world that started World War I basically on horseback. And the men who took these countries into war had these almost romantic notions of battle on horseback, and pretty soon they were, of course, fighting along 400 miles of trenches where barbed wire and gas and tanks and machine guns changed the equation dreadfully.
We're talking with Kenneth C. Davis right now about the 150-year history of Memorial Day in the United States. He's an author and historian, including the Don't Know Much About History series. And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. How do you observe Memorial Day? If you're a veteran, what are some memories you'd like to share? If you've lost someone to war, how do you remember them on this day? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Right now, we continue our conversation about the history of Memorial Day with Kenneth C. Davis. He's an author and historian. He's written numerous history books, including the Don't Know Much About History series. His latest book is More Deadly Than War: The Hidden History of the Spanish Flu and the First World War. And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. What are some of your thoughts and remembrances on this Memorial Day? If you're a member of the military, what do you wish people understood about Memorial Day? And if you have memories of family members serving, please call in now. The number again, 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to the phones, and Carol in Milwaukee is up first. Hi, Carol.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi.
I wanted to say I'm a pacifist, and I don't believe in war in general, and I don't even believe in the Second World War. Certain wars they think are good, and people say, well, we had to defeat Hitler, but I believe we should work way ahead of time and try to solve things that cause war instead of waiting until a Hitler or a Trump show up and then say, well, we have to have war now because Trump loves war and Hitler, you know, believed in war, I think. So I believe what we should do is first try to make friends around the world, try to help other countries so that they don't want to have war against us. And instead of going around the world having war against countries like the Middle East, we've been there for almost 17 years. What in the world are we doing there for that long?
And Carol, I just want to follow up and make sure that that Ken has a chance to respond. But I wanted to ask you, as a pacifist, how do you then treat the people who are sent to war, whether they choose to go or not, who either die on the battlefield or as a result of battle or come home as veterans? How do you, as a pacifist, relate to them?
I believe that churches should tell their young people not to go to war before it's too late, before they get PTSD. I believe we should be warned about what war is before going, instead of encouraging them by giving them honors when they go to war, when they get, you know, a Purple Heart or whatever. This is all causing more children to think it's so cool to go to war.
All right, thanks for that call, Carol. And Ken, would you like to respond?
Oh, my goodness, there's so much to dig into there. Immediately, I think, for instance, of Dr. King and how he probably would have been very much inclined to agree with the caller, and I thank her for the call. On the other hand, we're talking about a holiday born out of the Civil War, which was the result of a long process of the inability to compromise on the idea that people could be kept in chains. Was there any other alternative ultimately to ending slavery in America without armed conflict? I wish it had been the case. It proved not to be. So clearly there are sometimes things that we must finally take a stand against. I would probably be more inclined to agree with the caller than not about how we can, we should be working a lot harder to prevent such conflicts. And most of the wars in history have been grossly unnecessary, including World War I. But what do you do when there is no compromise on an issue as fundamental as the enslavement of 4 million people? They're very difficult questions.
Thanks again for that call, Carol. Let's go back to the phones, and Chuck is in the Village of Eagle. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
Just wanted to comment on Memorial Day is that it is many things. It's turned commercial, and it's a time for reflection. It's not a time for mattress sales. It's not a time for car sales. And one thing that really irritates me, I'm a veteran, but not a combat veteran, but a lot of combat veterans I know, is wishing somebody a happy Memorial Day. There's nothing happy about it. I had a good friend who fought in Fallujah. He's no longer with us, but every Memorial Day, he was sad and he kind of withdrew. He just couldn't believe people would go around with that happy attitude. And that's all I have to say, really.
Well, and Chuck, I'd like to follow up on that. I've also seen posted from NPR today that some veterans also say that they would prefer that people not say thank you for your service. Is there something more meaningful, a way to mark the holiday and what it represents, that rings true for someone like you who has served and has lost fellow friends that have served?
Well, I think many communities still have their veteran services over at a cemetery or at a VFW hall. But if you look at the participation and the number of people that show up for that somber remembrance, it's very few, maybe a handful. It's still more about the hype and the fun and games, I guess I'll call it. But, it's a little cliche to say thank you for your service. I'm finding it gets a little old after a while. It's sort of like a grocery checker saying thank you and have a good day. It just becomes so methodical and mechanical, it's lost its meaning.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for that call, Chuck. And Ken, would you like to reflect on that?
I think I completely understand what the caller is saying, expressing. I think we even referred to it when we opened the interview here, that it isn't a day to say Happy Memorial Day. The best case I can make is that we acknowledge that we are allowed the freedom to be happy on this weekend and do things like the beach and the barbecue because of enormous sacrifice over more than two centuries now. So I think that, you know, we've come a long way in recognizing what this holiday is, but certainly it is grotesquely commercialized. I saw one promotion today that it's National Hamburger Day and you should be patriotic by barbecuing. I mean, those sentiments are the worst kind of recognition of what this day is. Look, Congress asks us to do something very simple today, 30 seconds of silence, just a moment of silence. I always recommend people, they actually take 2 minutes to read Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. Read what Lincoln said when he dedicated the cemetery at Gettysburg in November of 1863 and spoke two tweets worth of words that are timeless. And
we'll have to leave it there. Ken, thank you so much for joining us today. Kenneth C. Davis is an author and historian. He's the author of Don't Know Much About History and other books in the Don't Know Much About series. His latest book is More Deadly Than War, The Hidden History of the Spanish Flu and the First World War. He joined us to talk about the history of Memorial Day.